Hey, everybody, and welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at a prayer.
A prayer.
Yeah, a prayer. Specifically, it's from Paul, and it's tucked away in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 15 through 23.
Okay, so a prayer from Paul in Ephesians.
Right. And, you know, I know you might be thinking a whole deep dive on a prayer, but trust me, this isn't just your typical, you know, bedtime prayer.
Right.
We're talking about Paul writing this from prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's heard all this amazing stuff about the church in Ephesus, you know, their faith in Jesus, the love they have for each other.
Yeah.
And it's like sparked something in him. You can just feel this intensity, this passion in his words, his powerful stuff.
It's interesting you say that because what really strikes me about this prayer is how specific Paul is in his requests. You know, it's not just a general bless them kind of thing.
Right. It's like laser focused.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so powerful. So I'm really curious to dig into this and see what we can uncover.
Okay. So let's unpack this. Paul's prayer zeroes in on two main areas, illumination and knowledge. And right off the bat, I'm struck by this phrase, eyes of your heart.
Mm.
I mean, you don't hear that every day. Eyes coming out of your heart. What's that all about?
Right. It's such vivid imagery. And I think it really speaks to a deeper understanding of the heart in the biblical context.
Okay. So it's not just about, you know, emotions and feelings.
No, it's more than that. It's the core of your being, the seat of your reasoning, your will, your entire understanding of the world.
Wow. So it's like the essence of who you are.
Exactly. So when Paul prays for the eyes of their heart to be enlightened, he's talking about a profound spiritual understanding, a kind of enlightenment that banishes darkness from the very center of who they are.
That's deep. Mm. I mean, when I read this passage, I always wonder what darkness might Paul be referring to.
Hmm. That's a great question.
Is it the same kind of darkness we might experience today? Like, what are the things that cloud our judgment or distort our understanding?
I think that's a really relevant question. You know, in Paul's time, there was a lot of spiritual confusion, all these different philosophies and belief systems competing for attention.
Right.
People were searching for truth, but they were often misled by false teachings and empty promises. And honestly, I think the same is true today. We're bombarded with so much information, so many different voices vying for our attention, that it can be tough to discern what's true and what's not.
It's so true. It's like information overload. And speaking of truth, Paul's prayer isn't just for a general sense of enlightenment. He's praying for the Ephesians to have specific knowledge, real tangible knowledge.
Absolutely. And I think the specific areas of knowledge he prays for are crucial for their resilience, their ability to stand firm in their faith and truly live it out.
Oh, I like that. So he's not just praying for them to know stuff, but to actually apply it to their lives.
Exactly. It's about having a deep understanding that empowers them to live differently.
Okay, so let's break down these specific areas of knowledge that Paul prays for. First, he prays that they would know the hope of their calling.
Okay.
Now I'm curious, what do you think Paul means by this hope? It's not just a wishful thinking kind of hope, is it?
No, definitely not. This is a hope that's deeply rooted, something solid and certain, anchored in the promises of God.
So it's like a confident expectation.
Exactly. And when you think about calling in this context, it's not just about what career path you choose. It's about God's ultimate purpose for your life, a plan that's far grander than anything we could imagine.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. So this hope is tied to an understanding of God's purpose for our lives.
Precisely. It's a hope that can carry you through difficult times, knowing that even when things are hard, you're part of something much bigger than yourself. It's about knowing that your life has meaning and significance no matter what circumstances you face.
That's powerful. And then he prays that they would know the riches of God's inheritance.
Ah, yes. This phrase always makes me think, is this inheritance material, spiritual, or both? What are these riches, and how does that knowledge affect how we live?
You're hitting on something really important here. You see, we often associate riches with material wealth, but in this passage, I think Paul's pointing to something far more profound. Okay, I'm intrigued. What are these riches that go beyond material wealth?
It's about the fullness of life that God offers us through Christ. Forgiveness, peace, joy, love, purpose. These are the true riches that can't be bought or sold, that can't be taken away from us.
Wow, those are some serious riches. But it's not just about receiving these blessings in the future, right?
Right. It's about experiencing them here and now. It's about living with a sense of abundance and gratitude, even amidst the challenges of life.
So knowing about this inheritance, knowing that we have access to this incredible richness of God's blessings, should impact our lives in the present. How so?
It changes our perspective on everything. It frees us from being consumed by the pursuit of worldly possessions or fleeting pleasures. It allows us to live with a sense of gratitude and contentment, knowing that we already possess everything we truly need.
That's a game changer for sure. And finally, Paul prays that they would understand the immeasurable greatness of God's power.
Yes. This is where it gets really exciting.
Right. This is the same power that raised Jesus from the dead. So he's saying that this same power is available to us.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this prayer so powerful. Paul's not just saying God is powerful. He's inviting the Ephesians and us into an experience of that power.
So it's not just about knowing about this power. It's about experiencing it, actually tapping into it.
Yes. And that's where the connection to illumination comes in. It's only when our hearts are truly enlightened, when we see things from God's perspective, that we can fully grasp the immensity of his power and its implications for our lives.
That reminds me of something you shared in the prep notes about those African fetish priests admitting there was a power surrounding Christians that they couldn't overcome. It gives me chills just thinking about it. So what are we to make of this power in our lives?
You know, I think it's easy to get caught up in the idea of supernatural feats.
Mm.
But for me, the real power of God is most evident in the everyday miracles of transformed lives, in the strength to overcome adversity, in the peace that surpasses all understanding.
So it's not about magic or showing off. It's about God's protection and care for his people. It's about that deep confidence that no matter what you face, God's power is greater.
That's it. It's about knowing that we're never alone, that we have access to a power that can overcome any obstacle.
That's incredibly encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul doesn't stop there. He goes on to describe just how incredible this power really is. He says, God placed Jesus far above all rule and authority and power and dominion and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. Whoa, that's a bold statement. Who are these rulers and authorities he's talking about?
It's a question that's been debated for centuries. Some believe it refers to spiritual powers like demonic forces, while others interpret it as a reference to political powers and earthly authorities. But what's important to remember is that in the Roman world, these things were often intertwined.
Right. There wasn't always a clear distinction between the spiritual and the political.
Exactly. And either way, it's clear that Paul is saying that God's power is supreme. It transcends all earthly boundaries and it's not limited by time or space.
It's like ultimate authority, ultimate power.
Absolutely. And that's a powerful reminder for us today. We may face challenges and opposition in this life, but ultimately we know that God's power is greater than anything we could ever encounter.
That's so reassuring. But what I find fascinating is that Paul doesn't just stop there. He doesn't just say, okay, here's all this power, go and use it. He frames it all within the context of prayer. What do you think he's trying to convey here?
That's a crucial point. I think Paul understood that true strength and resilience don't just come from knowing about God's power.
Hmm.
It comes from experiencing it, from having a deep personal relationship with the source of that power. And that's what he's praying for, that the Ephesians would truly know God, not just intellectually, but with their whole being.
So it's about relationship, not just information.
Exactly. It's about intimacy with God, about allowing his power to flow through us and transform us from the inside out.
That's beautiful. And that deep knowledge of God, that understanding of who he is and what he's capable of, that's what empowers us to live differently, isn't it?
Absolutely. It gives us the courage to make different choices, to stand up for what's right, even when it's unpopular, to love our enemies, to forgive those who've hurt us. It allows us to see the world through a different lens.
It's like Paul is saying, don't underestimate the power of truly knowing God. It can literally change your life. But he doesn't stop there. He goes even deeper and emphasizes grace. He concludes this passage with a powerful statement, by grace you have been saved.
It's one of those phrases we hear so often that it can almost lose its impact. But if we really pause and consider what Paul's saying here, it's mind-blowing. He's saying that our salvation, our very relationship with God, isn't something we earn or deserve. It's a free gift given to us out of God's immense love and mercy.
You know, this passage always reminds me of a time when I was really struggling with a particular sin. I felt so guilty and ashamed that I could never be good enough. But then I read this passage and it hit me.
Mm.
I don't have to be perfect. God's grace is enough.
It's such a powerful truth. And I think it's something that we need to be reminded of over and over again. We live in a culture that's obsessed with achievement and self-improvement. We're constantly striving to be better, to do more, to have more. But the gospel message is that we are already accepted and loved by God just as we are.
It's like a huge weight lifted off your shoulders. So if we truly grasp this idea of grace, if we let it sink in deep down, How should that affect our daily lives?
Mm.
How does it shape our choices, our priorities, our interactions with others?
It changes everything. It allows us to let go of the need to prove ourselves or earn God's love. It frees us to love others unconditionally without judgment or expectation. It gives us the confidence to step outside of our comfort zones and take risks, knowing that even if we fail, we are still held in God's love and embrace.
That's the kind of freedom I think we all long for. And Paul's prayer is an invitation to live out of that reality, isn't it? It's a call to walk in freedom and confidence, knowing that we are loved, forgiven, and empowered by the one who holds all things together.
Yes, and it's a call to action. It's not just about feeling good about ourselves. It's about allowing that grace to transform us from the inside out, to make us more like Christ in our thoughts, words, and actions.
So it's about becoming more like Jesus.
Exactly. It's about living a life that reflects the character and love of God.
It's so easy to get lost in the details of this passage, to get bogged down in the theological concepts. But I think it's important to step back and see the big picture. Paul's prayer is ultimately a prayer for transformation. It's about the Ephesians being so filled with the light and knowledge of God that they are able to face anything free from fear.
And, you know, I think that's something we all long for, that deep sense of peace and security that comes from knowing we are loved and cared for by God no matter what life throws our way. But it's not a passive thing. It requires us to actively engage with God, to seek his face, to listen to his voice, and to allow his spirit to work in and through us.
And that brings us to another key point in Paul's prayer. He reminds us that we are not alone in this journey. We're part of a community, a body of believers, and we need each other.
Absolutely. We need to encourage one another to pray for one another and to remind each other of the truth when we get bogged down by doubts or fears. I'm reminded of that quote by Frederick Buchner. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. We find our deep gladness in connection with God and with each other, and then we go out and meet the world's deep hunger with that same love and grace.
I love that. So as we continue to unpack this powerful prayer, let's take a moment to revisit the passage itself. I think hearing it spoken aloud can really bring the words to life.
I agree. It can help us hear it with fresh ears and let those truths sink in even deeper.
For this reason, because I have heard of your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love toward all the saints. I do not cease to give thanks for you, remembering you in my prayers, that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give you the spirit of wisdom and of revelation in the knowledge of having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you, what are the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and what is the immeasurable greatness of his power toward us, who believe according to the working of his great might, that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And he put all things under his feet and gave him his head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all.
Wow. Those words are just as powerful today as they were when Paul first penned them.
They truly are. It's like a symphony of grace and power, interwoven with hope and love. It's a reminder that even in the midst of suffering and hardship, God is at work and his purposes will prevail. But as we come to the end of our deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought, something to ponder as you go about your day.
Yes. Let's bring it back to the personal level. What does this all mean for us here and now?
Paul ends this passage by saying, "By grace you have been saved." What if we really grasped the magnitude of that grace? What if we allowed that truth to permeate every aspect of our lives? What would that look like?
What darkness might we need to banish from our own hearts? What fears might we need to release? What difference could that make in our relationships, our work, our communities? These are questions worth pondering.
Absolutely. I encourage you to revisit this passage on your own, allowing God's Spirit to illuminate his truth in a fresh new way. And as you do remember that you are not alone, you are part of a community, a body of believers who are walking this journey alongside you. You know, as we've been talking about this passage, I keep thinking about the sheer audacity of it all.
Audacity? I like that. In what sense?
Well, think about it. Paul's writing from prison, right? Facing possible execution, yet he's filled with this unshakable hope and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
He's not focused on his own circumstances. He's pouring out his heart for these believers in Ephesus, praying that they would experience the fullness of God's power and grace.
It really speaks to the transformative nature of faith, doesn't it? When you truly grasp the reality of who God is and what he's done for you, it changes everything. Your perspective shifts, your priorities realign, and suddenly the things that used to seem so important fade into the background.
It makes me think of that illustration about faith being like trusting a magician to chop off your head and bring you back to life.
Oh, wow.
It's a bit dramatic.
I know.
but it highlights the difference between intellectual assent and true surrender.
I see what you mean. It's one thing to believe in God intellectually, to acknowledge his existence, but it's quite another to fully trust him, to surrender your life to his care and allow him to work in and through you.
And that's the kind of faith Paul is describing in this prayer, isn't it?
Right.
It's not just about knowing facts about Jesus. It's about completely surrendering to him, trusting him with everything, even when it feels scary or uncertain.
Yes. And that kind of trust, that kind of surrender is only possible when we truly understand the depth of God's love for us. Remember how Paul starts his prayer. Yeah. He acknowledges the Ephesians' faith in Jesus and their love for one another. These two things are intertwined, inseparable.
So it's like he's saying, because you've experienced God's love, you can trust him. And because you trust him, you can love others.
Exactly. It's a beautiful cycle of love and trust, and it's what fuels our growth and empowers us to live as God's people in the world.
And it's what gives us resilience, right? Paul isn't just praying for the Ephesians to have a comfortable, easy life. He's praying that they would be equipped to face the challenges, the oppositions, the inevitable storms that come with following Jesus.
And that's where the knowledge he prays for comes into play. Knowing the hope of their calling, the riches of their inheritance, and the greatness of God's power, these are the things that give them the strength and courage to persevere, even when things get tough.
It's like he's given them a spiritual toolkit, equipping them for the journey ahead. And he's not just giving them the tools, he's showing them how to use them through prayer. He's modeling for us the importance of staying connected to the source of our strength.
And the beautiful thing is that this toolkit is available to us as well. We don't have to face our challenges alone. We have the same access to God's power, the same hope, the same inheritance that the Ephesians did.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to encourage you to remember this prayer. Remember that you are loved, you are chosen, and you are empowered by the God who raised Jesus from the dead.
Let that knowledge sink deep into your heart. Let it shape your thoughts and actions, and let it empower you to live a life that reflects the immeasurable greatness of God's grace.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
So we've been unpacking all this incredible stuff about God's power and grace in Paul's prayer.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing when you really stop and think about it.
It is. And for me, one of the most striking things about this passage is the contrast between Paul's circumstances and the tone of his prayer.
Oh, I see what you mean. He's writing from prison, facing a very real possibility of execution.
Yeah.
Yet there's this incredible sense of hope and confidence that permeates his words.
Right. It's like he's not even fazed by his situation. He's so focused on the Ephesians and their spiritual growth that his own troubles seem to fade into the background.
That's the power of true faith, isn't it? It allows us to transcend our circumstances and find hope even in the darkest of times.
It's like his perspective is completely different from what we might expect. It's almost like he's saying, yeah, things are tough right now, but guess what? God's got this.
And that's a message we all need to hear sometimes, especially when we're facing our own challenges and struggles. So how do we cultivate that kind of faith, that unshakable trust in God, even when everything around us seems to be falling apart?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think it starts with recognizing that true faith is more than just intellectual assent. It's about surrender. It's about placing our lives completely in God's hands and trusting that he knows what's best for us, even when we don't understand.
It's like that saying, let go and let God.
Exactly. It's about releasing our grip on our own plans and desires and allowing God to lead us where he wants us to go.
But that's easier said than done, right? I mean, we're human. We like to be in control.
No, absolutely. It's a daily battle.
Right.
But I think Paul's prayer gives us a glimpse of what's possible when we truly surrender to God's will. When we allow his grace to transform our hearts and minds, we begin to see the world through a different lens. We start to see his hand at work even in the midst of our struggles.
It's like we're putting on a new pair of glasses that allow us to see things more clearly from God's perspective.
That's a great analogy. And when we see things from that perspective, our fears and anxieties begin to fade. We realize that we're not alone in this journey, that God is with us every step of the way.
And that brings us back to the importance of grace, which Paul emphasizes so beautifully in this passage. He reminds us that our salvation, our relationship with God, is not something we earn. It's a free gift given to us out of his immeasurable love.
And that's a truth that we can never hear too often. We live in a world that's constantly telling us we need to do more, be more, have more. But the gospel message is that we're already enough in God's eyes. We're already loved and accepted just as we are.
It's like a huge weight lifted off our shoulders, knowing that we don't have to strive and perform to earn God's favor.
It's true. And that freedom, that sense of being unconditionally loved and accepted, is what empowers us to live differently. It allows us to love others freely and generously without fear of rejection or judgment.
It's like we're finally free to be ourselves, flaws and all.
And that's where true joy and fulfillment are found. Not in trying to be someone we're not, but in embracing who God created us to be.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Paul's powerful prayer, I want to leave you with a few questions to ponder. What if we really allowed ourselves to grasp the magnitude of God's grace? What if we truly believed that we're loved and accepted just as we are? How would that change the way we live our lives? How would it affect our relationships, our work, our interactions with the world around us?
Those are great questions. And I think the answers are different for each of us. But I believe that as we meditate on this passage and allow God's Spirit to speak to our hearts, we'll begin to see those answers unfold in our lives.
It's a journey of discovery, a process of transformation that begins with surrender and ends with a life that reflects the immeasurable greatness of God's love.
And it's a journey worth taking.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Ephesians. We'll see you next time.